Chickadee boo. Good evening, one and all. Another month gone by. End of April already. And of course, it's only 30 days, so it's May tomorrow. May Day. It's actually quite big in England. Used to be. Used to have maypole dancing and stuff like that. And it's a holiday, May Day holiday. You have one bank holiday at the start of May and one at the end of May in England. I think one of them used to be the old Whitsun, if I remember right, going back in those times. But I am here, and so is my guest. Now, when you travel from one country to another, like I did, you move across the pond, as it were, it's a big thing. Even though at the time I was 48, something like that, when I moved, it's still a big thing. But what about when you're a lot younger? What about, well, we'll find out a bit more about that in a minute. But when you get here, it's, you hear all this about the American dream and stuff like that. And I must admit, at the moment, it's more like an American nightmare. But that's another story. Anyway, my guest today, she has finally, I say finally because I'm sure a lot of people have been on at her about writing her memoir, explained a lot of this in her wonderful book called My American Dream. Let's find out a bit more about this, because we've done, what, 1900 shows coming up now, and a lot of times in those, fact sometimes is stranger than fiction, and you think this is make a great film. And today, my guest and this book is one of those. I better introduce her, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Barbara Fagin. Hi, Barbara, how are you doing?
Hi, Barry. It's so good to talk with you.
It's great to chat to you. It really is. Because, you know, I've read a sort of, like I normally do, read up on the guests and stuff like that. And I thought, oh my God, this woman, what's she done? I mean, been there, done it, got the T-shirt and got the drawer to go with the T-shirts. It's amazing what you've done. But as I say, first off, it's a real pleasure to have you on the show. Secondly, people say Fagin. No, not Oliver Twist Fagin. Where does I know that? But that's because your son's the CEO of Milwaukee Bucks, right?
Right, go Bucks.
Yeah. Oh, there you go, you see. Now that's half the audience have turned off now. That's No, but it's great to have you. Let's start.
Thank you.
Let's start at the beginning, because the beginning is a huge part of, you know, anybody's life. But in your case, it's even more so, because at the age of two, I might add, your parents escaped from Nazi Germany, and via Japan, of all ways, you actually ended up in America.
Yes. Yes. Fortunately.
And I mean, that must have been a huge upheaval. Do you remember any of it? I mean, at age of two, I can remember a couple of vague things from two, but it's sort of, in that case, with the traumatic upheaval and everything, do you still remember any little bits of that?
Oh, Barry, I remember nothing. I remember nothing. I was 2 years old.
Right.
And I knew that we had escaped, my Jewish father and my Lutheran mother and I, at age two, with a group of 82 refugees altogether. I knew we'd escape, but I knew nothing of the details at all.
Right.
Until I got a call from my sister, who lived in Annapolis, Maryland, about 13 years ago, I guess, maybe 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And she called me regularly, you know, to keep up on family things and so forth. But she said to me, Barbara, I have something amazing to tell you. I have discovered a journal that our father kept in the run-up to the escape and throughout the escape itself. And I was floored. I had no idea that such a journal existed. My parents had never spoken about it. We'd never seen it. My sister had gone through some of my papers, my father's papers, after he died, and she found this journal. So she sent it to me.
Right.
And I read the journal, and I was absolutely overwhelmed emotionally.
Right.
Just completely taken aback by hearing the details of this terrifying escape. You know, my family and I left Germany in July of 1940. So this was very much at the onset of World
Oh,
War
crikey,
II.
yeah. I mean, it was dangerous times. I mean,
Oh, terrifying.
everything was on the, upheaval, '39, '40,
Absolutely
yeah.
terrifying, terrifying. And one of the big problems was that my father, who was trying to find a way for us to get out, was having a very difficult time. First of all, getting visas for all of us.
Right, of course, yeah.
Secondly, getting money for our passage. The money had to be American money, and he had a sister who lived in New York who sent him money for his passage, but not for my mother's or mine. So that was a huge problem.
Wow.
And then this was, he first learned that we would finally get passage on a ship called the Rex out of Italy across the Atlantic Ocean. And just when that time came up to go, he found that there were no more ships going across the Atlantic because
Right.
of the German submarines.
Oh.
And so then he was
Of course,
told
that makes sense,
we'd
yeah.
go to Finland for
Yeah.
some reason, and then to France. Everything fell through, and he was just in a frantic panic until finally he got us passage on this German on this train out of Berlin. Just absolutely a few days before our visas were about to expire.
Oh.
So this was a frantic, terrifying, terrible time when Jews were being
Yeah,
persecuted and
yep.
he was panicked, as was my mother. And I'm learning all this as I read the journal. I didn't know anything about it,
Oh,
as I was
amazing.
growing up. It was amazing. It was amazing. And the trip was absolutely horrific. Horrific. 82 refugees. The oldest was 81, and I was the youngest at age two. My parents had $10.50 for our entire family, the clothes on our backs, and the few things they could carry, including me.
Right.
And they brought a tent because they had no idea where would we live when we got to America. You
Right.
know, they had no connections, no money, no people, no nothing, no
Yep.
job. My father wrote in his journal, three quarters of the way around the world into the unknown.
Indeed.
But the train, as I told you, it was a 17-day trip from Berlin through Lithuania, Russia, including Siberia.
Oh, so you went. Oh, I saw you went via Japan, and I'm trying to work out. So you went the
Well, you couldn't
steps
go
and
across
down,
the
right?
Pacific anymore,
Yeah,
so
that
you
made
had to,
sense.
I
Made
mean, across the
sense.
Atlantic.
Yeah, that
So
made
the
sense.
question was, how could you get to the Pacific? And finally, through China, through Korea, and finally to Yokohama, Japan. And then from Japan, a 14-day trip across the Pacific on a Japanese ship called the Hikawa Maru. But the train trip, Barry,
Yeah.
was terrifying. They had several days when there was no food, there was nothing to drink, it was very, very hot. It was July, and you can imagine going across
Into
the Gobi
Tiwa,
Desert
yeah.
in July and into
Oh,
Japan,
crikey.
where it's so hot and humid.
Yeah.
And the train was stopped 14 times.
Ah.
And each time the train was stopped, my parents had to show all their documentation. And many times they had to show what was in their few pieces of luggage.
Right.
They were terrified
Oh,
each time,
I can
terrified
believe it.
that they would be taken off the train and God knows what would happen to them,
Right, yeah.
You can imagine me reading this journal,
Yeah.
having known nothing about any of this. Oh my
Amazing.
God, I learned so much about not
Oh,
just the trip, but about my parents
right.
and
Absolutely amazing. I
how.
mean, that just the thought. I mean, you were traveling through basically countries that were Nazi friendly, even to Japan, sort of thing. It was, oh,
Terrifying,
unbelievable, unbelievable.
absolutely terrifying.
Oh.
And you think of this young couple traveling 17 days on this horrible, dirty, awful train with no food, no
Yeah.
drink, with a 2-year-old.
Oh.
Oh my God, it's just sort of unbelievable to even imagine.
And when you got,
So,
sorry, Barbara, go ahead.
go ahead.
I was just going to say, when you got to America, how I mean, they had to sort of find a, you know, something to work and where to go and everything.
Barry, they had no idea. They had no idea what they would do. But I must tell you, and my father writes about this in his journal very eloquently. He said they were so elated to be in the land of the free. Right. And he talks about this. He said where we could be who we wanted to be,
yep.
where we could do what we wanted to do, where we could strive to really accomplish whatever the objectives we aspired to for ourselves. And he said he could express his views that none of this could happen in Germany at the time.
When Jews were being
so persecuted, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, you asked, you know, what happened? We landed in Seattle, and for a few days, you know, there was a Quaker group and a group, a Jewish organization who helped these refugees, and they set the refugees up in a hotel for a few days. And my father, through with their help, was able to find some yard work. So he did this not knowing what would become of him and how would he ever make a life for our family. But the same group found a job for him in what was then the iconic store in America, Sears Roebuck.
Okay.
And he was sent to a tiny little town in Southwest Washington State, near nothing. It was a farming town, a logging town, and his job was in the Sears Roebuck farm store.
Oh.
Now, here's a man from Berlin,
yeah.
you know, very sophisticated, big city, diverse, et cetera, has no English, no money, no nothing, and he's working in a farm store.
Oh, my goodness.
Trying to sell chicken feed and barbed wire and what have you. Barry, he was so determined to make things work.
And he he did, because he passed that down to you, didn't he? He passed that down to you. Go ahead.
When I was growing up, I didn't think about any of these things.
Yeah.
I was this weird little refugee girl who spoke no English and who wanted to be just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to be an authentic American girl.
Right.
I wanted to be just like all my school friends, just like all my friends in my town. I didn't think much about my parents or where they'd come from or what they'd struggled through, nothing. So when I read this journal and I learned all this, I was just so taken by...
I can imagine. And... That story would make a wonderful second book for you. I sure it would. as you said, your father, you know, you grew up in the small town, just wanting to sort of become, as you said, an authentic American girl. But your parents really encouraged you. Was it dream big, work hard, and never quit? That was the mantra for you, and that's what you did.
I certainly tried. And you know, just like everybody else, there were challenges and bumps in the road and what have you. But, you know, based on my parents, really, I learned from my parents so much through osmosis, I would say, you know. And I really grew up really understanding their values without their preaching them to me. They just lived them.
Right.
And I
yes.
think that helped me a lot, you know, as I faced challenges in my own life. I always tried to look forward and not spend too much time belaboring the problems, but trying to find the solutions. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes it wasn't so easy, but one way or another, like my parents, I was able to go forward and life worked out very well. You know, I was very lucky.
Well, in your book, My American Dream, you go through that because you went to college, you got a bachelor's arts degree, political science, you graduated, run jointly by Harvard Business, and that was before women even were admitted into Harvard. So,
that's right.
I mean,
that's right.
You've challenged everything and you've beaten them. and right from the start, because as we get to in a minute, you know, when you did go out to, you know, did start work and stuff like that, you challenged what was set there, and you beat them, the men in their own world. But how was it going to college? I mean, as you say, you know, you still had, must have had an accent and that, but for you to sort of, you know, a refugee post-war to suddenly get a degree and go to college and, you know, be in business school and stuff like that, that must have been something very almost unheard of.
Well, you know, I think the most challenging thing for me was when I was about to graduate from college, the options for women were to become nurses, mm-hmm. to become teachers, to become typists, or to get married.
Yes.
And none of those options at that point appealed to me. And I thought, oh my goodness, what am I going to do?
Right.
You know, I had always worked and I was interested in business. And I heard about this program that was run jointly by the Harvard Business School and Radcliffe Graduate School. And as you say, it was at a time when women were not admitted directly to the Harvard Business School. So there was this, quote, separate but equal
right.
program for women. You know, the same courses, the same teachers, but it was taught not on the campus of the Harvard Business School, but rather at Radcliffe.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think too much about it at the time. I was very, you know, excited to be going there and grateful. But as I reflected, you know, later on, I thought, well, you know, this is really kind of ridiculous for us to be doing the exact same thing on a separate campus. And just to give you a little anecdote about what the times were like, we women were not, first of all, we were not called women. We were called girls. The men were called men, and we were called girls.
Crikey.
So we girls were not allowed to go to classes with the men at the business school.
But seriously?
They had, yeah. They had. I mean, it was the Harvard Business School. You know, the best of the best, creme de la creme, and they invited wonderful, wonderful sort of tycoons of the business world to come and speak. And we girls were allowed to come to the speeches, and there were often cocktail parties after the speeches, and it was a chance to meet these wonderful business leaders. And then the Harvard Business School usually had a dinner to honor the business leaders, you know, a small dinner hosted by one of the professors at the business school, and inviting 8 or 10 of the men from the school and one woman, girl, right. from my program. And at one point, I was invited to come, and I was so excited, Barry, to come.
Right.
You know, I can't remember who the speaker was, but it was a real honor to be able to come.
Mm-hmm.
And the dinner was at the Harvard Club in Boston. So I got all dressed up, and I took myself to the door of the Harvard Club and sort of started to walk in, and the doorman said, no, 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 you can't come in here. And I said, but I'm invited to dinner here. He said, no, no, you're not allowed to come in here. And I said, again, but I'm invited to dinner here. And he said, well, you can't come in this door. This is for men only.
Oh,
you have to go around to the back alley and
right.
go through the kitchen.
How bad.
So, those were the times. I did that, and I, you know, didn't think too much of it because I was so happy to be at the dinner and to be included with this mm-hmm. very august group of people. So anyway, that was just a sort of a sign of the times.
But you beat it. I mean, you, what do they say? Broke the glass ceiling. I think that's the phrase, isn't it? Well, you cracked it, but you cracked it in more than a little crack. I'll tell you, because we'll get to that again in a minute. But you became... let's face it, this was a business which was totally male-dominated, i.e. advertising. I mean,
right.
as you said, you know, you're either a typist or a receptionist. That was it. You know, ideas on advertising? What does a woman know? But you became a vice president of Grey Advertising in the end, didn't you?
An executive vice president.
Yeah, executive vice president, sorry. Executive. Hey, it's a vice president, right?
right. No, that was a very big deal. And part of the 6-person management team of this huge global agency that Fortune magazine always used to call a global powerhouse. Right. So that was something I was very proud of and very excited to be involved in.
Yeah, but yeah, that you're also voted one of the country's legendary pioneers.
One of Gray's legendary
Grays, Grays.
pioneers.
I know. I suddenly. Why did I say that? I imagine you out dressed
Well, I
like
love
Davy
it.
Crockett.
I love it. Sounds great.
As soon as I said it, I got this mental picture of some, you dressed like Davy Crockett. No, not pioneer. But yeah, I mean, you, and a wonderful thing was one of the wonderful things, because I mean, you've got what, three children of your own, sort of thing.
Right.
You instigated maternity leave.
Yes. It was interesting. In my first job in the advertising business, before I went to Gray, I worked for another very major, very prestigious agency. And I worked in what they called advertising research. And what that meant was, we looked at what the alternative advertising campaigns were to find out which one was more effective, which one was more memorable, more persuasive, more likable, and the like. And this was sort of my first taste of advertising. And oh, I just love being in the advertising business. And at that point, I was married and I became pregnant. And, a few months down the road, I thought, well, this is about time for me to talk to my boss about this and tell him what my plan is. And so I made an appointment with my boss, whose name was Dow. I liked him very much, and he always liked my work and liked me. And I said, "Dow, I have fabulous news to tell you. Jim, my husband, and I are going to have a baby." "Oh," he said, "that's fantastic. Congratulations." And I said, "Let me tell you my plan. I plan to work until the baby is born, and then I'll take a few weeks off, and then I'll be back." And Barry, his face just fell. "Oh no," he said, "no." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "No, we don't do that." "Do what?" "We don't have maternity leaves." I said, "But Val, my plan is to work until the baby is born, take a few days off, a few weeks off, and then come back." Well, he said, "I can't help you with that, Barbara. I'm going to have to go to the higher ups." So thankfully, he went to bat for me, and he did go to the higher ups. And I had no idea what would happen because they didn't have maternity leaves in this agency, and hardly any place else either at that time, by the way. And so he called me into his office a few days later, very excited, to say, "Barbara, you have it." I said, "I have what?" "You have a maternity leave." "Oh," I said, "Val, that's fabulous. Thank you so much." He said, "But I have to tell you, we can't promise you that you're going to have the same job when you come back, and we can't promise you that you'll have the same compensation, but you do have a maternity leave." I said, "I am thrilled." And Barry, I was thrilled clearly for myself, but I was thrilled because it really cleared the pathway
Other
for all the
people.
women who came
Exactly,
after me.
that's
And it was
great.
really, really a big deal.
Well, your book, My American Dream, goes into that and a lot more of the stuff you do in the adverts that you've done, and things like that. I'm sure, even I've heard of some of them, and some of them I haven't, because we never had Easy Breezy Cover Girl. We never had that. No idea what that is in England.
You had Lee jeans, though. I remember working
Oh
on
my
that in
goodness, we did
London.
Lee jeans. Oh yeah, number two to Levi, Wrangler, and Lee. Lee and Wrangler are
Right,
about the same behind Levi.
exactly.
Oh, cracky, yeah. And of course, you had to get them faded or wash them
Yes,
until they were
yes.
faded, and then back in the sort of late 60s, 70s, you had to make sure that they were frayed at the bottom,
Right,
and then pull
right.
the individual threads out of the bottom to make them have like a tassel fray.
Very, very personal, right?
Right. These days, people can't afford jeans, because I see them walking around with great holes in them all over the place. So I guess they just can't afford jeans anymore. It's terrible, isn't
Oh,
it?
dear.
The success of your book, as I said, finally to get it done, great success to it. But I want to chat for another hour, but time is beating us. And I'm telling people out there, this book is a must read, as you've heard Barbara explain, and we're a fraction of the way through this wonderful wonderful book, people. wonderful book. But what I'm going to do now is actually hand the show over to Barbara to have her tell everybody where they can find more about herself and the book. So, Barbara, over to you.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Barry. Please go to my website, Barbara Fagan. Fagan is spelled FEIGIN.com. And you'll learn much more about me and more about my book. And you'll also be able to buy my book through buttons that you can click on the website. Of course, you can also buy it wherever you buy your books, either online or in retail stores. And I hope you do. I hope you buy it, you enjoy it, and importantly, that you feel a little bit educated by it.
Right.
And if I can inspire just one of you who's listening today, it'll make me feel like I made a real difference.
And
so thank you.
That's all we can ask for, Barbara, isn't it? To make one person, difference to one person makes it all worthwhile.
Exactly.
Well, Barbara, thank you so much for being my guest today. It's really, I really, really enjoyed chatting to you. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Barry. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
And to you. Well, how about that then? My guest today, Barbara Fagan, F-E-I-G-I-N, about talking about a wonderful book, My American Dream, A Journey from Fascism to Freedom. And as I said, you know, we talked about the advert she worked on, how she was sort of broke through the glass. She broke the mold, you know, of allowing women what they could and couldn't do. And I mean, even now there's a lot of places don't have maternity leave and sick leave and stuff like that in America. Unbelievable, I find that. When you get people like some of the Scandinavian countries, the men get a month's maternity leave as well, because let's face it, you've got to bond with your child and look after them, what, you know, the mother and everything like that. And here we are in America, so-called modern country, where you say you don't even get sick leave, but then who can afford medicine in America? Another story. Never mind. But great, great book. Great lady. Really enjoyed chatting to. My American Dream, A Journey from Fascism to Freedom by Barbara Fagan. Well, that's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh guest. But until then, I have one thing left to say. Don't forget.